Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Why is the Dallas that is south of I-30 so different from what lies to the north? And what needs to happen to replace the most daunting realities of living and working in South Dallas with prosperity, pride, and opportunity? About 2 years ago, the Dallas Morning News announced a long-term project that would shine a spotlight on the southern sector, both its most critical challenges and its unsung successes. In that time, the area has seen some important change. But those who know it best say there is still a lot of work to be done by the city, the school district, the business community, and the residents of South Dallas before stakeholders can achieve the kind of security and economic opportunity enjoyed by their neighbors to the north. Here to talk about that and the state of South Dallas in 2009 is Todd Robertson, a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Kevin Ann Willey is editorial page editor. Both have been deeply involved in the paper's Bridging the North-South Gap project for the Dallas Morning News. Todd, Kevin, welcome back to Think.
Thank you.
What makes the southern sector so different from what is farther north?
Well, I think the easiest way to sum that up is that for many years, the southern portion of our city has not experienced the sort of public sector investment or even private sector investment that the northern part of the city has. And so over decades, it has been allowed to languish. There's acres and thousands of acres of vacant land, undeveloped land, and a lot of other economically based challenges that part of our city faces as well. And of course, it's in all of North Texas's interest for Dallas to have a strong city, north and south, not just for economic prosperity purposes, but also for tax burden purposes. So it's in all of our interest to see a strong southern Dallas.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of tax revenue that simply isn't being realized because there's nothing developed in certain parts of South Dallas.
Exactly. I mean, you drive around northern Dallas, and pretty much it's built out. When new construction is undertaken in northern Dallas, something has to come down in order for something new to be built. All across southern Dallas, it's wide open. I drive around there all the time. I'm in some kind of a southern Dallas neighborhood at least once a week, if not more. And I'm just shocked on a regular basis at how much open land there is there. And when there's open land, that means tax dollars aren't being collected. And that means that northern Dallas taxpayers have to foot that portion of the bill for the southern half that isn't producing.
What's pretty remarkable is the proximity of South Dallas to downtown, where there is such a concentration of wealth and activity. Is this something that a lot of other major cities the size of Dallas have experienced, or is this unique to us?
I think a lot of cities have experienced this sort of inequity. And, of course, I would argue that its proximity to downtown in the Dallas situation is an asset that has gone for decades unexploited. So I think that there's a great deal of opportunity and potential because of its proximity. Other cities have similar challenges. I don't know, though, that any city has quite the same challenge that we have in terms of magnitude. Dallas is, as you know, one of the largest cities in the country, and the fact that we have, nearly half of the city's land mass is south of I-30 or south of the Trinity, and yet it only accounts for 16% of the property value. That's a pretty wide chasm.
Did the building of the freeway sort of mark the beginning of the major decline? There have always been problems, I know, in South Dallas as compared with the north part of the city.
You're talking about which freeway? SM Wright or?
Well, I'm talking about 30.
I-30. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, first of all, it's important to clarify that the boundary that we set as the dividing line between northern and southern Dallas is not official. It's not something that somebody declared this is southern Dallas and this is northern Dallas.
It's just the way you're looking at
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we picked that boundary because on one side, the Trinity River divides the city more or less in half, but then that stops at downtown, and then the Trinity takes a turn to the south. But if you follow I-30 on the other side of downtown, it roughly finishes out that straight line. In one sense, nature helped create southern Dallas, and in the other sense, a man-made object created that boundary. I wouldn't say that I mean, if you cross under I-30 and go from Fair Park into East Dallas, you're going to see pretty much the same conditions. It's not as if poverty starts south of I-30, but at the same time, as you go deeper into southern Dallas from that boundary, you start to see a greater incidence of the exact kind of conditions of poverty, underused land, those sorts of conditions that you just don't see so much on the northern side.
Kevin, can you talk about how this project came about for the paper and what sorts of resources you've been able to devote to studying South Dallas as compared with the rest of the city?
This project was really born out of a conversation several conversations two or three years ago about what could we do to help do away with what has been decades of economic injustice to a lot of the residents in the southern part of the city. And the conversation started sort of small and then expanded and grew into an editorial board project, which we decided that we wanted to take on. The challenge with a project like this is, how do you affect change and what is your ultimate goal? How do you measure success? And so we sort of set two different kinds of goals. One is a very long-term goal. This is not going to happen overnight, and it is to narrow the gap of property values between North and South. That metric will ultimately measure success. Well, for anybody who's followed property values, they know that's certainly not going to happen in, you know, a month, 2 months, 2 years, 3 years. This is more likely to be a two-decade effort, and that can be daunting, if not intimidating. So we also had to set some shorter-term goals, ways we could measure progress, progressively. And so we talk about wanting to make the southern part of the city a place where people want to work, live, and play. And we developed the 10 Drops series of editorials, which isolates individual, we call it low-hanging fruit, small-bore kinds of improvements, like getting rid of junk on a vacant piece of property or smoothing potholes at a particularly difficult intersection. Todd has been a leader on Dead Man's Curve, which is a very significant challenge. So we measure success by progress on those as well. But really, to be effective, and newspapers are not known for being applying sustained energy over a long period of time to very difficult problems. And that's what we're pledging to do here, is to stay with this as long as it takes.
And when you say drops, you're talking drops in a very large bucket.
Yeah, 10 drops in a bucket. Yeah, we call it 10 drops for short.
Todd, for people who haven't kept up with the series, talk about Dead Man's Curve.
Dead Man's Curve is it's a highway turn where U.S. Highway 175 meets up with the S.M. Wright Freeway, which is basically the start of the Central Expressway in southern Dallas. And it takes an almost 90-degree turn, which is very unusual anywhere in the country for a U.S. highway. People going 55 miles an hour to have to, within about a third of a mile, slow down to 20 miles an hour. And I've driven it many times, and I assure you, if you don't slow down to 20 miles an hour, you'll go out of control.
It's well named.
Exactly. and that's its nickname. It's not officially known as that, but one of the engineers and leaders of TxDOT has said that it's an engineering nightmare. He's personally embarrassed as an engineer that this was ever built this way. But if you drive over there, it's shocking just to look at all of the marks along the curve itself. They've got the barriers up there, and people crash into it all the time. It's a regular occurrence. I've talked to some residents over there who say pretty much on a weekly basis you'll hear a major crash. And what got our attention was a big tanker crash there. Last year, the tanker exploded, and in the process of burning, it burned up a freeway overpass where a state highway connects to those two highways. And that's when we became activists, because it was clear this is just far too deadly to go on like this. And our opinion is that had this kind of a problem existed in northern Dallas, it would not have gone neglected as long as it it has been. So Dead Man's Curve led into a broader discussion of what to do about the SM Wright Freeway itself, which was built in the late 1950s and early 60s, and it's a separate problem. When you asked about the freeway, I thought maybe you were talking about that, because the construction of SM Wright divided South Dallas, very close to the Fair Park area, into two halves. And when it severed the community, property values dropped. There used to be a lot of money in South Dallas. Some very rich families lived in some pretty nice mansions along South Boulevard, Park Row. And when that freeway went in, they kind of abandoned it because nobody wanted to live next to a freeway. And so you can pretty much trace the rapid economic decline of South Dallas when that freeway was built. So we just want to see the whole thing changed.
Another thing that I know has been a focus, and Kevin, you alluded to this, is things like trash on a vacant lot or a building that is crumbling. Talk for a minute about the process by which a non-functioning, non-maintained building can actually be demolished.
And we have a prime example of that. Recently, the Dallas Inn was finally taken care of, and we can go into some detail about that. That had been an eyesore for some time. And I should back up to say that as in putting together our priorities and how we were going to strategically make this case over and over again in the paper, we started by meeting with leaders of Southern Dallas across the variety of neighborhoods, inviting them in to discuss with us how they saw the problem and what they thought we should advocate for. It can be daunting to, do you start with advocating for commercial development? Do you start advocating for better education? Do you start advocating for greater retail options? Where do you start? I mean, the challenges are huge and they're almost in a circle. You know, you just keep going around. So we started by asking people's opinions about what we should be advocating. How could we be most constructive? How could we be most helpful? And that's what's led to a lot of these priorities. It can be daunting to call for – it seems like it ought to be easy. You just pick up the phone, call the city, say this has been vacant. It's a drug hangout. It's a whatever it is. And, you know, just demolish it. Well, the problem gets really complicated when there are multiple owners for different parcels of land. The city has some condemnation powers, but not many in some cases. Just because it's an eyesore to you, it may be somebody else's investment. It's just extremely complicated. And so while every month we publish 10 drops in a bucket that we'd like to see solved, it takes more than a month to solve them. It's a rolling feature, and some of them have been on the – we celebrated the Dallas Inn at raising because it had been on there about a year and we were tired of writing about it. So we finally got to applaud that one.
Well, it also gets into the whole question of, you know, when we advocate getting rid of these eyesores, we have to take into account, well, what's better, a business that's ugly, not contributing too much to the community, or raising that and having another vacant piece of land? And we faced this question many times. One in particular was when we advocated for the city to block an adult video store from opening up in the Redbird area. One of the members of the editorial board rightly raised the question, what's better, a working business or a vacant piece of property?
And the answer's not the same depending on the situation.
Exactly.
Todd Robertson and Kevin Willey are here from the Dallas Morning News. We are talking about the Bridging Dallas's North-South Gap project. You can join us now by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering a progressive and customized graduate degree with flexible part-time study in Dallas and Plano. You can pursue your passion, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about bridging Dallas's north-south gap with Todd Robertson and Kevin Willey of the Dallas Morning News. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Earlier, Kevin, you mentioned the fact that you have had multiple meetings with people who actually live and work in South Dallas. I wonder how often anyone on the team was surprised by different elements that people who have a direct stake in the community, how they were different from what people outside might think is the number one issue to get resolved.
It's a good question. The challenge was there were so many answers. People would come in and advocate, you need to start with the school system. Education is where it's at. It's the foundation of everything else. And if there were strong schools, then more people would move into Southern Dallas, which would drive retail and commercial and yada, yada. And then there were, the next meeting we'd have 2 hours later, a group of people would come in and say, well, you really need to start with commercial development, because until you get retail options and businesses down there for jobs, nobody's going to move into the area. And, replay that six different ways. I don't know that that would be that different than if we were asking the same question in northern part of the city. I mean, people come at the challenges based on their own experiences and interests. And, we were left sometimes scratching our heads after those meetings going, oh my gosh, what are we getting into? Where do we start? It's so challenging and yet so important that we just kind of had to dive in.
Todd, you wrote recently about something that I thought was really interesting that might not sort of figure on the radar screens of people outside South Dallas, which is the fact that a lot of people who live down there have exceptionally long commutes to get to where they actually work. And that plays across multiple spheres within their lives in that community.
Exactly. We part of the study that we teamed up with the University of Texas at Dallas to perform was a study of commute times. And we found that the average commute time from Southern Dallas was fairly high, significantly higher than the citywide average. And we found that there were actually a lot of people in Southern Dallas, particularly in the Redbird area and I believe Oak Cliff or Pleasant Grove, who have commutes one way of 90 minutes or more. And so if you factor these out, there are some people who are commuting an hour and a half, 2 hours, up to 3 hours a day. And what that means is that they're spending more time in transportation costs to get to jobs. Those jobs tend not to be very good paying jobs, but they are jobs. And so they take them very seriously and do go to work every day. But that if you're taking away an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours a day for a parent, that means that's a parent who's not at home helping their kids study, behave well, learning what they need to be learning. And so it has the effect of a vicious cycle. One problem feeds into the other.
We have an email here from Audra in Frisco who asks if you could comment on the historical racial issues that have contributed to the city's divide.
I think racial issues have contributed to the city's divide. I don't think that that's the only factor at heart here, but you certainly cannot ignore it. I'm pleased that we have gotten such a wide degree of support from leaders across a variety of different racial communities in Dallas, supporting the goals and the strategies of this section, or of this project. I think there's more unity around what needs to be accomplished now than perhaps there has been in the past, and the challenge is transferring that feeling into action.
Well, another aspect of the racial question is whose vision is it of what needs to be done in Southern Dallas? I mean, what the residents of South Dallas near Fair Park might have a completely different view of what needs to be done versus what someone living in Northern Dallas thinks needs to be done. And the big question is that they ask is, Are you talking about gentrification? Are you talking about getting rich whites to come in here and take over our houses and push us out? Because when you talk about raising the tax base, when you talk about increasing land values, when you talk about investment from outside, that's what you're talking about. And what I've tried to contend all along is, especially in the case of South Dallas and West Dallas, these are the neighborhoods that we've studied, that there is so much vacant land available there that it could be developed without pushing a single person out, and it would probably improve the lives of a lot of people there.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Tom in Fort Worth. Hi, Tom.
Hello?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in my late 50s. I grew up in Oak Cliff, and a lot of the problems that are being talked about on the show, while I agree with them, they've been going on for a long, long time. I know even as a child when North Park was developed, at the same time there was a concurrent plan to develop another shopping center on the south side called South Park, and that never happened. All my life, every few years, they've raised the idea of, you know, the Trinity River development and turning that into parkland and things like that to generate industry. For many, many years, city council in Dallas was all at large. And so because of that, I think in a lot of respects, the southern part of the county was not represented at all for many, many years. And that still seems to be going on to me, because if you look most recently, you know, we had a billion-dollar Cowboy Stadium that could have been built in South Dallas at Fair Park, and it was blocked. You know, that could have made a huge difference. So, you know, all my life I've heard people talk and talk and talk about making changes, but then the changes never seem to come. I guess those are my comments.
Thanks so much for your call. A lot of people did have high hopes that changing the nature of city council would fix this problem sooner than now.
Yeah, I think the caller is exactly right. There's been a lot of talk, and I guess our challenge is to help convert that talk into more action. Mayor Tom Leppert named a Southern Dallas task force a while back, and we applauded that move, and he put Councilman Tennell Atkins in charge of it. And we think clearly that that's a step in the right direction. We have also voiced some concern, however, that the task force worked very hard to solicit community input about what needed to happen in a variety of different areas across Southern Dallas, and then broke up for the summer and lost a little momentum. And so we've been critical of that. We'd like to see everybody's foot on the accelerator constantly, and so we'll continue to advocate along those lines.
We have neglected this problem for decades, and that's how it got so bad, because it was neglected over a long period of time. So Tom is absolutely right. And our philosophy is, well, we have to dive in somewhere. We can't just continue to ignore the problem and hope it's going to go away. So this entire effort is to shine light on it, keep the pressure on everybody involved, and make sure that it doesn't get shoved under the rug.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Wanda in Dallas. Hi, Wanda.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. I'm glad I was listening. However, Tom just took the words out of my mouth. I'm a Dallas native, and I've lived in both South Dallas and Oak Cliff. I commend you, Todd and Kevin, and what you're doing in bridging the North and the South. I moved to South Dallas when I was in third grade. At that time, it was still mostly white. I moved to Oak Cliff when I was in the seventh grade. It was still mostly white. And as Tom mentioned, we've been trying to do this forever. I am a community leader in South Dallas. I'm well aware of Dead Man's Trail and all this, and I would like to help with the Southern Dallas Task Force or help you, Todd, and Kevin Ann with whatever you're trying to do. I live in South Dallas. Well, my zip code says South Dallas, and I love it. There are a lot of great things happening there, but once you get over, we even have a Green Line train station now, but once you are set up at South Dallas Fair Park, no one actually wants to know, but I advise people to come over and look to see where all the projects are being torn down on Hatcher. They're great townhomes now. Former city council, Diane Rexdale, has ICDC, and she's great thing. At one end of the spectrum is the south of the private school, And we have homes at the other end, which is like Home Street and back there for St. Phillips. So they need to come over and take a look. A lot of things are going on. And Kevin, Todd, I'm sorry, you are correct. There's a lot of land that we could do. But I think, first of all, we're going to need a little commercial. And no one wants to come to South Dallas. So if I can help you, I'll be glad to. I'll try and contact you later, and I'll listen to you off the air.
We would love that.
Wanda, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Well, where do I begin with that comment? We feel that it's not just incumbent upon the city leaders and the business community to fix this problem. That there is another component. Yes, I do think people need to come to Southern Dallas and give it another look. Stop being so fearful. Stop making these characterizations about crime and all of these other problems that are much more exaggerated than they really are. But on the other hand, the state fair is in session right now, and I know from having done this exact same exercise over 2 years that you talk to fairgoers and you ask them, do you ever go walking outside of the fairgrounds, just down Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard? And they will say, "No, I'm not crazy. What are you talking about?" And that perception right there is a direct result of another part of the problem, which is that local residents are not taking the action to clean up their own communities and be more proactive in seeing to it that they put forth the best possible image of their neighborhood. They need to create a climate that would make it attractive for investors to come in and build the kinds of things that they want to see there.
How do you empower that kind of activity among a population that, as you mentioned, often is commuting 3 hours a day overall or working for very low salaries? And you know, sometimes it's hard enough to pay the mortgage, let alone fix up the front yard.
It's going to take a long time. It won't happen overnight. But one of the things that we advocate for in the points section on September 20th was for city leaders, school board members, anyone in a leadership position, even nonprofit groups, to take a little bit more time to try to get neighborhood groups organized. And it really does start at a neighborhood level. One of the big differences that you see between northern and southern Dallas is all across northern Dallas you have neighborhood property owners associations, and they're very active in making sure there's code enforcement, that you get the trash off of the streets, that people take care of their lawns and do the kinds of things that help keep their property values up and just make it a more pleasant place to live. And we need to see that level of activism in southern Dallas. And I'm convinced that the residents just don't know how to go about it. And that's where they need to see leadership, just people helping them get it started.
And one small thing that we can do is help shine light on the successes as groups organize and achieve a drop in the bucket, you know, to provide, to shine a light on that. And that can be inspiring and can build support. And also the other thing we can do is highlight challenges, things that are going unaddressed and that a call to action, those kinds of things. The research that Todd referred to earlier that we partnered with University of Texas at Dallas in producing, which formed the backbone of the point section two Sundays ago, one of the interesting things the data showed was that while there is a widespread perception that the crime rate is higher in southern Dallas than in northern Dallas, in fact, the numbers do not back that up. So that's an example of something that may have been true at some point, I don't know, but is no longer true.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Tim in Dallas. Hi, Tim.
Hey, part of what I do in my job is I drive around the city quite a bit, and it was so funny that you guys were talking about Dead Man's Curve. I was actually on it when you guys were talking about it. It was, you know, not funny, of course, but very ironic to see all of the repaired pieces of concrete from people who had slammed into that thing. So I think the proof is in the pudding right there. But you know, it always strikes me so bizarre to be a mile or two at the most outside of downtown on the south side of town. I always just marvel at how different the landscape is in all aspects from a mile or two north of the downtown area. It's astonishing to me. And I've lived in a lot of different towns, large cities, Dallas, St. Louis, Chicago, Los Angeles, and it always has made me wonder, what is it about the south side of a city that always gets the bum rap? It's almost across the board the way that works out. And so I don't know whether there's an answer to that or not. I just find that kind of ironic. And then the question I have, though, is that I wonder if part of the problem and what makes this kind of cyclical and more difficult is the fact that someone like myself, who actually lives in the middle part of town, I would say probably on the east side of Dallas, you know, I don't really have a need to go to South Dallas. Everything that I need, I can get basically where I live. As probably can most people who live on that side of town. So I wonder if maybe part of the problem is that unless there's a need to come down into that area, people aren't going to physically be there, and if they're not going to be there, it's going to be much more difficult to have someone increase their sense of empathy for the situation that exists in South Dallas and in the south side of a lot of our large cities. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Tim. Well, you've identified one of the issues that we're dealing with, and that is we certainly need to be sure that there are more jobs created in the southern part of our city so that there is an economic backbone to that region. And while historically there may not have been much need for northerners to go south, I would contend that perhaps that's changing. I mean, the construction of the interurban, I've forgotten the full name of the transportation hub, which is going to be in the southern part of the city where millions of dollars of freight is going to come into this region through an area that is currently being planned and developed in the southern part of the city. So I think there's the potential for a much greater economic engine there that would breathe some vitality into the development of southern Dallas.
Yeah, that's the international inland port of Dallas, and the hope is that is going to create something like 60,000 jobs over the next 10 or 15 years. It would be a huge boon to employment down there and hopefully uplift the area.
Todd Robertson and Kevin Ann Willey are with us from the Dallas Morning News. We're talking about the project for bridging Dallas's north-south gap. You can join the conversation now by sending an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering a progressive and customized graduate degree with flexible part-time study in Dallas and Plano. You can pursue your passion, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about bridging Dallas's north-south gap with Todd Robertson and Kevin Ann Willey, both of the Dallas Morning News. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. One of the recommendations that's been made for improving South Dallas is an economic development corporation. First of all, can you explain how those operate and what it might do for the area?
I think the most significant thing that an economic development corporation can do is to help plan and coordinate and spur strategic economic development in a region. And what we've been calling for is a corporation that would be somewhat independent of the city council so that you would get away from some of the politicization and turf fighting that occurs there. But certainly it would need to be part of the city's general approach to these issues. So we have been assertive in describing what an economic development corporation would look like and in general how it should run. We've looked for models elsewhere, and we think that this would be a huge benefit to help spur development in the southern part of Dallas.
And one of the big challenges for whatever this entity would be is what would be its powers? Because right now the city is mired in a certain kind of bureaucracy, much of it regulated by the state. About what they can do with vacant land, for example. And the hope is that an economic development corporation would be empowered to kind of cut through that bureaucracy. And what's really needed, what we're talking about, is that, you know, when you have an area with so much vacant land, you need someone who can kind of compile it together into large parcels that developers can do something with, because you're not going to turn around the Southern Dallas real estate problem with just piecemeal fixes here and there. You're going to need something of a bit larger scale. And so the Economic Development Corporation hopefully will be empowered to do that kind of a big scale project.
And this is something that has been embraced by the Southern Dallas Task Force, and they have advocated or supported this call. So now I think the next step is to get the city council to create such a thing. We'd love to see the mayor and the city move aggressively on that front.
How much money does it take money from the city to put this in place?
It does. It'll take some startup money, but I don't think that should be the prime obstacle. I think it's relative to the potential gain. Not to overuse a phrase, a drop in the bucket.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Dave in Dallas. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, go ahead, please.
I wanted to call and make a couple of comments and then get a comment from your guest. First, I appreciate very much the fact that the Morning News is doing this series. And for those of us who have worked on issues in Oak Cliff and the Southern Sector for many years, I appreciate your perseverance, because that's a key to anything that goes on south of the river. And if I could also point out, I very much appreciate hearing them use different terms such as South Dallas, West Dallas, Oak Cliff, and Pleasant Grove, because South Dallas is not the Southern Sector. South Dallas is one particular neighborhood that surrounds Fair Park. So thanks for being aware enough to know that the neighborhoods have different names. My particular comment and concern regards developing land in the Southern Sector, because we can develop the Southern Sector, but the land down here in the south is much more environmentally sensitive than it is in the north. When North Dallas was developed, it was mostly old cotton fields. In the south, we have escarpment, tree coverage, drainageways, creeks, different kinds of soils. And so, yes, we can develop the southern sector, but we have to do it in a way that's much more environmentally sensitive than the way the north was developed. Otherwise, we're going to pay a very steep price for development and developing the tax base. For example, if you destroy the southern sector tree canopy in the name of development, if you think we have ozone problems now, we're really going to have ozone problems then. So I just think we have to go about this in such a way that it's not done piecemeal, as Todd mentioned a moment ago, and it's done in a way that takes into account the vast and wonderful natural resources that we have here in the south. So we can develop the tax base, but we've got to do it carefully.
Yeah, great points. Thank you so much.
I think those are outstanding points. I have hiked in the Great Trinity Forest and was just stunned to learn what a rich and dense forest that is within a couple of miles of downtown Dallas. It's really quite impressive, and I would wager that many of your listeners are unaware of the fact that I think it's the largest hardwood forest
urban in the United States.
Urban in the country. And it's a gem. It's a hidden jewel. I've also taken a canoe and floated down the Trinity from West Dallas down to where the Loop 12 meets 75. And that is an impressive landscape as well. So I think your caller's right. There are special challenges to developing Southern Dallas. But I don't think we should let the existence of those special challenges hinder any kind of momentum or effort to move forward. There is a way to develop and to be economically vibrant and yet protect some of the best jewels in the area.
Exactly. Those really are assets. It's just not like they're liabilities by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, when you get these magnificent views the way you do in Southern Dallas, you can be in parts of Southern Oak Cliff, and I think it's the best view anywhere in North Texas, and you see the downtown skyline and the idea that so much land around there is just sitting there, not used, is appalling to me. One of the things that I did in this project, we've got a separate online component to what was published on September 20th. And in this online component, I did these 3D video kind of virtual helicopter tours of Southern Dallas, and one of them looks at all of Southern Dallas. You kind of fly over it, and you can see some of these natural elements to it. So you know where development is not going to occur, but you can also see in very stark reality where the development can occur and is not. And these virtual tours help familiarize people who, for one reason or another, don't want to go down there and see it for themselves. You can see it in just a matter of 10 or 15 minutes and take your own tour of Southern Dallas.
And why don't you give the web address so people can sign on and check that out? Because it is phenomenal, and credit to Todd for developing this.
The main address where you can access everything is dallasnews.com/opinion/north-south.
We'll go ahead and put a link to that on our website this afternoon as well. We have an email here from Dallas May, who says, I was a teacher at an underperforming DISD school for 2 years and found that teachers and parents tell students that they need to study hard and work hard so they can leave the neighborhood. Kids who do graduate and do go to college and do succeed don't come back.
It's a problem. There is a particular problem in some parts of South Dallas and Redbird where people have kind of reached a level of success and decided to move on. Very often you see them moving out to places like Duncanville. And soon after that, after they moved out there, you started to see all of the big name stores that they've spent years trying to get into Southern Dallas actually move into Duncanville instead. It's a problem, but at a certain point, the economics are going to catch up with everyone. Economics in two senses. One, if you're just trying to get cheaper land, a cheaper place to build a home, there is lots of it in Southern Dallas. But in addition to that, as we were discussing last year, there's the question of what's going to happen with oil prices in the future. Mm-hmm. And when oil prices go back up again, people increasingly are going to start looking for places to live closer in to downtown. Northern Dallas is built out. Southern Dallas is a wide open space.
Let's go back to the phones now, and this time we will speak with Felix in Irving. Hi, Felix.
Hello there. Good afternoon. I wanted to ask your guests, in the 70s and early 80s, I remember in Oak Cliff, African-American-owned mom-and-pop convenience stores. Now such stores are predominantly Korean, Arab, and South Asian-owned, and I just wanted to know what happened. I'll hang up.
Thanks for your call.
I can't really answer that question. I mean, you still see an awful lot of mom-and-pop stores of every variety, every ethnicity. So I couldn't really characterize it as being some massive influx of Arabs and Koreans down there. One of the components that we do have online is this database where you can actually look at the various ethnicities represented in Southern Dallas. And, I mean, you can zero down to how many Hawaiians and Alaskan natives are living in Southern Dallas. And one of the other things that you can look at online in this database is the ratio of stores to drinking places, restaurants to libraries. You can compare all kinds of data and get a better sense of what's actually happening on the ground. And one of the advantages of looking at this, as well as everything else that we've got online is and in the points section, is it helps to dispel a lot of the myths, because it's very easy when you have two halves of a city as divided as this, you develop a communication barrier. And once you develop that communication barrier and people stop talking to each other and talk amongst themselves, that's where the myths start to circulate about, you know, oh, you know, there's too much crime down there and, you know, they don't want us down there, et cetera, et cetera. One of the great things about this study that we teamed up with UT Dallas to do is to actually have statistics. In some cases, it confirms some of people's worst fears, but in others, it absolutely refutes them.
And what's significant about that is then you can use that information and have an informed starting place as our public leaders shape policy. Do we really need another liquor store? How is that ratio compared to other neighborhoods across Dallas? So you can really use the data to help shape responsible public policy. I think that's so important and critical. And the data is fascinating because not only can you go onto the website and compare trends across the five neighborhoods that we have selected to examine in depth, but you can also compare those trends to a citywide average. It's not a north-south comparison, but it's a citywide comparison opposite the five neighborhoods that we've chosen to look at. And the five neighborhoods are South Dallas, which is near the Fair Park area, Pleasant Grove, West Dallas, Oak Cliff area, and Redbird. We picked these areas because each of them has a different set of needs, and it kind of underscores how difficult the problem is. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution there. And also because in each case, while they have challenges, each of those neighborhoods does have something working or a potential opportunity to capitalize on. We see potential gain, and so we'd like to help each of those communities experience some degree of success and then watch that radiate out and hope that that spreads and expands across the entire region.
Setting aside the issue of liquor stores and adult-oriented businesses, which I think a lot of people can at least agree are not often desired by people who want to see neighborhoods thrive, is there a way, or is it even beneficial to try to calculate, is a barbershop better than a shoe store? Is a neighborhood grocery store better than a gas station?
Those are very difficult decisions, and I think they're largely dictated by neighborhoods and what's already there and what they aspire to be. That debate is raging right now along it's Fort Worth Boulevard, I think, and some of the areas there about what the business community, what kind of development is optimal. You certainly don't, in my opinion, you don't want to stamp out what has been historical development. Sometimes it's ethnic-based or cultural-based. By the same token, you don't want to give such priority to what is already there that it limits the possibility of growing and expanding. So it's kind of a case by case. Maybe Todd has a more sophisticated answer.
Yeah, we have some very vivid examples. Fort Worth Avenue is a very good example, or Jefferson Boulevard, but also in Pleasant Grove you have Buckner, which has the highest concentration of automotive-related retail anywhere in the city. It's like 45% of the city's automotive business is conducted on that little stretch of Buckner and Pleasant Grove. And clearly, that's lopsided. Something needs to be changed there to create a more healthy mix of retail, because not everybody in the world lives off of a carburetor. You know, you need something else to feed your kids and enrich their lives. So, these statistics kind of show in some aspects a lopsided kind of commercial picture that can be improved upon.
We have just a few seconds left. Aside from the things that we've already mentioned, what would you recommend people who don't know South Dallas go and visit in the next month so that they can get a sense of the potential of the area?
There's a new Audubon Society that's near the forest, and that's just a beautiful facility, and it does give you a sense of the richness of the area that is in stark contrast to sort of the stereotypes.
I would say take a video tour and you'll see for yourself where the assets are.
Video tour first and then head down there in person. Todd Robertson is a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Kevin Ann Willey is the paper's editorial page editor. You can learn more about the project to bridge Dallas's north-south gap at dallasnews.com. It's always a pleasure to have you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.